Good morning. I'm going to call the Government Operations and Election Policy Committee to order. And our first order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Sandstedt, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
I'll go ahead and move the minutes for approval.
All right. Representative Sandstedt moves the minutes from April 4th, 2017. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Minutes are adopted. And now we will move, Representative O'Driscoll will move House File 565. Representative O'Driscoll to State Gov Finance.
Correct. Madam Chair, thank you. Appreciate you filling in for me as I got this bill this morning. And I do move House File 565 to be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. And Madam Chair, if we could, there are two technical amendments that nonpartisan staff has brought forward. And to my immediate right is Ms. Susan Lincheski, and to her immediate right is Ms. Rachel Barth, and they are both from the pension office here in the legislature, the nonpartisan office. And I would ask them to maybe explain both of the amendments. Again, they are technical in nature, just to get the bill in the form that we want. And then, Madam Chair, at that point, I will make some general comments before we move to taking testimony.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. So would you like to move the amendments first? Or?
Yes, please. I would move the A1 amendment to House File 565.
Or D.
I would like.
I think we need to move the DE amendment first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Procedure, you're right. Let's move the DE amendment. I will move the SO 545-12A amendment to House File 656.
Any discussion?
Bingo.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails.
And now we'll take the two amendments. We can share the A1 to House File 565 as amended.
Representative O'Driscoll moves the A1 amendment. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, if we could just have nonpartisan staff just explain a little bit as to what this is so that members and those present know what it is. And the Senate took these two amendments yesterday as well.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Just for the record, it's a 1A, not an A1.
1A.
Madam Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I've been working off in the Pension Commission on Senate documents, and they actually reverse the numbers the way they are. So once again, another difference between the two bodies.
So it is the A1 amendment after all. All right, so the motion that is on the floor is appropriate. And Madam Lincheski, if you'd like to explain the amendment, please.
Madam Chair, thank you. The 1A amendment is clearly, I think, a technical amendment. It came from the revisers after review of the bill. As you can see, it makes changes to section or subdivision and also clause paragraph of numbering, changes certain prepositions. It changes some singular terms to plural, and just makes a number of grammatical fixes to the bill.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll, any further comments?
Member support, vote yes, please.
All right, any further discussion? All right, so the motion on the table is to approve the 1A amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the 2A amendment this morning as well to House File 565 as amended.
Representative O'Driscoll moves the 2A amendment. Would you like further explanation on this?
Madam Chair, if nonpartisan staff, I'd like to just give a brief overview so that everyone knows what we're looking at.
Ms. Lincheski, would you like to explain the amendment, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. This is only slightly more substantive. There was an error in the date as of which the police, parapolice and fire state aid would begin. So the change is to have it start in 2017 rather than 2018. That was a typographical error. And then some language regarding the appropriation under the St. Paul direct aid needed to be moved from a section where it had showing up inadvertently and is now being moved to the proper place in the state aid section.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the 2A amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails and the 2A amendment is adopted. Representative O'Driscoll, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will just give a brief, maybe 60-second overview, and then I'd like to turn it over for maybe a 5-minute or so overview for the committee members and those assembled from nonpartisan staff. The 2017 pensions omnibus bill came about as a result of a number of different things. Number one, a few years ago, the pension plans had a mortality study done, and what mortality means is how long are people going to be living. Some results from that mortality study I think were good news. People are living longer, healthier, and happier, which is a great, great thing. It just goes to show what the advances in medicine and physical fitness and health have done for folks compared to generations past. With that also comes the need to pay out benefits to retirees who are healthier, happier, and living longer as well. Secondly, what has happened is through some consultation and work with outside individuals, the governor put together a blue ribbon panel to talk about the rate of return for investment on investments and targeted rates of return for the plans. 5 years ago, that was at 8.5%. For many of the plans, it was brought down to 8%, and it's being recommended that that be brought down to 7.5%. That's another good thing because it reduces volatility brings down the bogey of what we need to be hitting for a rate of return to be able to keep our plans here in the state of Minnesota and the St. Paul teachers stable. So with that, the plans have put together some recommendations. The commission has spent 4.5 months diligently working through, taking testimony, asking questions, getting professional reviews and consultations on what would some of these different ideas look like. And so earlier this week, the commission passed out of the commission a bill that is before us today. It has gone through the Senate as well. For those who are here today, the Senate took an action that we are not going to be taking this morning in this committee, and that was to take out the TRA proposal. My hope is that at the end of the day today in this committee that we will pass out the bill as we see it before us, because there are no other amendments, and it is not my intention today to do anything to alter the bill other than, again, if we are successful in moving it from committee to state government finance. We'll continue to work with Senate and with stakeholders. We know that this is a work in progress, as well as in consultation with the governor's office. And so with that setup and those disclaimers for people, maybe that helps to calm a few fears of what people might have seen happening earlier in this this week and in the other body as it relates to this bill. So, Madam Chair, if it's all right with you, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth for, like I say, about a 5 or 7 minute setup, and then maybe go to the witnesses, and then we can start discussing it as a committee.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Ms. Lincheski, if you'd like to speak further to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will halfway through turn this over to Rachel Barth. I'm suffering from a pretty bad cold, so and I may not last forever here. But I'll just quickly go through the summary of the bill, not the section by section, since that goes into great detail about the bill. So on page 2, I'll just mention that in Articles 1 through 8, there are a number of benefit changes. The Pension Commission views these as benefit reforms. One of the changes is that there is a benefit in the statute which pays something called augmentation to former employees who have left state employment. It's an automatic annual increase in the pension benefit earned by somebody who has left state employment, and that continues to be earned on an annual basis till they take their benefit at normal retirement age. So the statute, or the bill, excuse me, eliminates augmentation effective 2018. It also phases in the elimination of augmentation as it is used in the calculation of early retirement benefits. So this is all part of the theme of taking out augmentation. That has a delayed effective date and a phase-in until 2023. In addition, the bill reduces the COLA for MSRS and TRA. These have significant funding or liability implications for the plan, so these are ways to help the plans with their funding deficiency. It also delays the commencement of COLAs for early retirees until normal retirement age. Again, another cost savings measure. That is also phased in until 2023. It also reduces the rate of interest paid on refunds from 4% to 3%. These are refunds taken by former employees who have left service and elect to take their employee contributions out. They get interest on those employee contributions, and that interest rate is being reduced from 4% to 3%. The bill also requires the Pension Commission to do a study on COLAs, post-retirement adjustments, to determine whether the methodology for setting COLAs makes sense or whether it should perhaps be tied to inflation or some other metric. In addition, as Representative O'Driscoll mentioned, the bill reduces the investment rate of return from 8.5% for all the plans except TRA. TRA is at 8.5%. All the plans, though, are being reduced in the bill to 7.5% for the assumption for investment returns. It also extends the amortization period for all the plans for another 30-year period, or resets the 30-year period, so it'll expire 2047 for all the plans. There are a number of contribution increases in the bill. Those are detailed on page 9 and 10 of the section by section. I won't go into those unless there are specific questions, but there are increases in the rate of employer contributions and employee contributions for most of the plans, and those are set out on pages 9 and 10. In addition, there are direct state aids to the para, police, and fire in the amount of $4.5 million for 2017 and 2018. That increases to $9 million for that plan thereafter. And then also an annual direct state aid payment to St. Paul teachers under the bill as well, and that's in the amount of $5 million starting in 2017. There are also a number of language cleanup changes. One of those is to add a new interest rate section. So there, a good chunk of the bill is just taking references to interest rates all throughout these statutes and changing those to refer to a new interest rate section, which will then have them all consolidated. And Rachel, if you want to carry on.
Ms. Barth. Thank you, Madam Chair. So then Articles 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 just make administrative or technical changes to the plan statutes. So just a lot of cleanup, clarification, making statutes conform with practice. Article 14 updates actuarial assumptions, mainly based off of the 2015 experience studies that the plans conducted, and just removes obsolete references. Article 15 provides modifications for volunteer firefighters governed under Chapter 424A. So, for example, adopts the changes recommended by the 2015-2016 Volunteer Fire Relief Association Working Groups, and addresses issues for specific VFRAs. Article 16 deals with MSRS-specific administered retirement plan modifications. For example, clarifies the deadline for submitting a disability application, adds additional Department of Corrections and Department of Human Services employment positions to the MSRS correctional plan. Article 17 is PARA-specific administered retirement plan modifications, so revises the definition of line-of-duty death to be consistent with the Federal Hometown Heroes Act and deals with issues relating to volunteer firefighters who are governed under Chapter 353G. Article 18, just sort of generally applicable retirement changes. For example, it authorizes the plans to accept gifts, donations, bequests, life insurance, death benefits. Article 19 are the individual constituent or small group changes. So in general, it just allows specific employees to elect retroactive and prospective plan coverage. And then Article 20 are technical corrections, mainly taking out obsolete references to Duluth Teachers Retirement Association.
Thank you. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One thing I want to just touch on, the concept of augmentation, it took the Commission a little bit of time to understand what that concept means. I'd like to just explain that in a little bit more depth for the members of the committee this morning. Augmentation would work like this. Let's say that you were age 25, and I'm just picking an arbitrary number. You work for a Minnesota public agency covered by MSRS, or it could be a local organization, city, county, school district, where you were covered by PERA or as a teacher by TRA. Well, what ended up happening is if you put in 10 years of service, and I'll use a round number of 2% per year is what your retirement would be. So 10 years times 2%, you'd be looking at 20% of the last 5 years' average salary would be your retirement benefit. So at age 35, you made a personal decision for your career to separate from public employment, or there could have been an involuntary separation, which is a nice way of saying you've been fired. from your position, and until you choose to draw that benefit, because you would be eligible having met all the requirements, that benefit would grow, again, 20%, and say you had the $30,000. That $6,000 benefit at the time of retirement, if you waited another 30 years to draw that, that would increase by 2% per year. And so what's happening is the system, by that augmentation, provides a continued benefit for someone who has chosen to separate from public employment and not make that a career for a career benefit. And so what we're saying is maybe it makes some sense. When you terminate your employment with the state of Minnesota or a public entity, then the benefit should terminate for you as well without having that. And right now, in some of the plans, it's as high as 2% augmentation, and we're paying COLAs as low as 1% in some of our pension plans. And so we're actually enriching those individuals who are no longer in public service with a 2% augmentation, but those who have made a career and are drawing a pension are actually being penalized at as low as 1%. So we felt that that was an inequity in the system, and it should be addressed. And so I wanted to just share that with the members of the committee this morning, because that can be kind of a difficult concept to understand.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Yes, that was a conversation that we had in the pension committee, and many people were not even aware that was happening. And actually, staff brought up sort of the discrepancy between the active members and ones that were no longer contributing. So that's why that's in this bill. Do we have any member questions or staff at this point? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative O'Driscoll, so I understand the augmentation and what it does. And I understand maybe the inequity there of the person that's no longer employed getting a better better return than the people that are retired and getting COLA increases. But couldn't this have an adverse effect on our pension plans? I mean, doesn't this encourage people as they separate from service to encourage them to take their money out of the plans, thereby reducing the plans, the money that's in the plans? And in effect, I think in past years there's been some studies about the reason why deferred benefit plans, which we have, do better for us than deferred defined contribution plans, because in defined contribution plans you can't invest in heavily as good of returns, because you got to keep more money in cash and more money ready, because at any time someone could leave and take all their money out, and so they have to have a little more cash flow, and so we don't get as good a return on those plans. So couldn't this, in effect, make these plans, our plans, have a double whammy of the money being out, and now because we have to account for that, less money or less, in, I would say, less risky investments, but investments that have higher returns, not invest in those because we have to account for that?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, that's a very good question. And although I don't have any hard evidence on that, I do have an example in the state of Minnesota that maybe we can ask PERA to address, because they do have some of their plans where they have removed augmentation. And we can maybe ask if they've had a mass exodus of those individuals taking their funds out because the augmentation benefit had been terminated in that plan. My hunch is that if you are able to get a 3 or 4% return by leaving your money in, and you're vested in the plan, you probably want to have the guaranteed pension, so you may not want to withdraw it regardless of whether you've got augmentation benefits. Because you would end up having to, if you withdraw, you only take the employee portion, not the employer portion of the contribution, unlike a defined contribution plan where you would be able to take both your employee and employer contribution. So that portion of the employer paid is always forfeited, whether the individual chooses a refund or ultimately draws a pension benefit.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative O'Driscoll. And one of your points in this, you talked about that the difference between a person getting a COLA that worked their whole career here and a person that left for, you said fire, but if someone could be laid off, we could have budget cutbacks and people could be let go because of that, staff reductions. It's not all people being fired for cause. I was a little concerned when you said it that way, but the question is, did the Pension Commission look at, instead of just eliminating the augmentation, having the augmentation match what the COLAs are, so that going forward, if the COLAs, you know, if the person in PERE is getting 1% COLA or 0.5% COLA, that the augmentation would match those, what the COLAs are for that year, so that we keep these people at even par, because many times the people don't leave service on their own accord. They're not, you know, as you said, sometimes they leave because they may have a better job offer, but sometimes they leave because they get cutbacks, reductions, all sorts of different reasons that it may not have been their choice, and so now, but now we're punishing them because we're letting them go and forcing them to find other employment, but we're also punishing them because now we're going to take that chance for their pensions to grow as they would have if they had stayed in employment.
Representative Driscoll or Ms. Lincheski, do you want to take that one?
Oh, Madam Chair, I guess I would like to respond to that question. First and foremost, to the idea that a person is being penalized if they're being laid off, that's not mutually exclusive to public employment. So private sector employees are subject to layoff and right-sizing and downsizing and the things that you mentioned. It's not mutually exclusive to the public sector. I'm aware that those individuals who are in the public sector may be given a severance package, some of those kinds of things, but many are not. They're given their last paycheck with a hearty thank you. Sorry, the situation is the way it is. To the issue of the augmentation rate and the COLA, there had been some discussion on that, but the majority of the commission's opinion was they wanted to eliminate the entire augmentation portion of statute, as we're discussing in the context this morning.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I had a little bit of consternation about that piece, the augmentation piece, totally being eliminated. And I know the Pension Commission probably has looked at this long and hard, but I think that's the part of the bill that most people have the most heartburn with. And plus the fact that, like I said, we're adding on to the teachers, the school districts are going to have to pay in for their employee share of it, and there's no money in the bill, even though the governor had that in his budget, no money in this bill to help offset that. So, in effect, their school districts are going to have to choose between, well, they're going to have to put more money into their pensions and their contribution, but now they're going to have to probably lay off teachers and lay off staff when they have to come up and do this. So that's my concern with this bill.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do want to be very transparent. Representative Nelson, you know that I have always cards down and transparent on things. And you're right, there is not a funding mechanism that is in this bill at this time. It is the chair of the Pension Commission, and this year I'm the vice chair. It is our intention to try to get it to our final stop, Ways and Means on our side, and the Finance Committee in the Senate, hoping that we can make this as a part of a global agreement to be able to get some funding as things continue to progress. And so the best way to do that is to take it through the committee process, continuing to work with the stakeholders to try to find a way to get to a good spot for everyone.
Thank you. And if you wouldn't mind sharing, what are the percentage of funding on each of the pensions, if you understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
For augmentation?
Yeah. Well, no, I meant for the total plans themselves. I mean, what are the reasons that we're going through all this is because we're trying to make these plans as solvent as we can. And so if you wouldn't mind sharing that with
me. Madam Chair, are you referring to what's their current percent of full funding?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Ms. Barth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So their current funding status is, so all the plans are using 8%, TRA is using 8.5%. So MSRS General right now is at 78.3%, Paragenerals at 72.4%, TRA is at 72.6%, and St. Paul is at 60%.
Thank you very much.
What was St. Paul? I'm
sorry.
60% for St. Paul's. Okay. Representative Lynch, or excuse me, Ms. Lincheski.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to note, this is at the 8% or 8.5% investment return. When the investment return is dropped to 7.5%, which has been determined to be a little more reasonable rate of return as an assumption, that does reduce their funding situation.
Thank you. That's a very good point to bring up. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that's the question I was going to ask is where that was at, because people that aren't, that don't deal with the pension all the time may not understand that. But when you reduce the assumed rate of return, that you actually increase the unfunded liability because you're not going to be assuming in those out years that you're going to get that 8%. Now we're going to only assume they're going to get 7.5%. And so that means that we have to go back to my earlier question, that we're going to have to find ways to make sure that there's more money into these plans from the employers and the employees so that we can that they can be fully funded. And so that's a concern I have also.
Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair, my final comment, unless there are other comments, maybe we want to start bringing the plans and other testifiers. Along with what Representative Nelson says, even though you're going from 8.5% to 7.5%, you say, what's a half a percent? It's really not a half a percent. You're having to pick up that portion of the rate of return. So it actually equates into about an 11 or between 8 and 11% shift on the rate of return, because you're not getting that extra 1% or half a percent over those periods of time. So it does have an effect, and so does the anticipation of paying benefits out over a longer period of time affect that as well, based on the mortality study. So, Madam Chair, if you would like to take testifiers.
Yes, thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. So the first person that we have on the list is Lori Hacking, who is the Executive Director of the Teacher Retirement Association. If you'd like to make your way forward, and then as normal. Oh, and also we have Jay Stoffel, who's a Deputy Executive Director with also TRA. And if you wouldn't mind just stating your name for the record and who you represent, and proceed with your testimony. Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lori Hacking, Teachers Retirement Association.
Jay Stoffel, I think we're kind of short here. Deputy Director of Teachers Retirement.
Thanks for the opportunity to testify. First of all, I want to say thank you to the Commission and Representative O'Driscoll for their very hard work to address this funding problem that we face. We have been had a long tradition here in Minnesota of really maintaining the financial health of our pension systems, and this bill and this effort is a very important movement in that direction, and that's important. We really appreciate that. When we, TRA, put together our bill several months ago, we were guided by several principles. One of them was, let's restore the financial stability of the system, and certainly the bill in front of you does that. It does a very good job at that in the sense of the money coming in. But we were also concerned in formulating reforms about the very concerned about intergenerational equity, concerned about the maintaining the recruitment retention value of pensions for teachers, because as you know, we're facing a teacher shortage, and that is an important issue. And lastly, and very importantly, to have a balanced shared commitment approach to solving the problem so that not one group, whether it's teachers, retirees, employers, has to bear the lion's share of the burden of solving the problem. And it's that last issue that I think we were most concerned about in this current bill as it's drafted, and that's the balance of shared sacrifice. Right now, as the bill is drafted, about 87% of the solution is really borne by active teachers and retirees, and 66% of that is by active teachers. And the main pieces of the bill that create that imbalance are the COLA reduction, which not only affects retirees, but also affects active teachers' benefit once they do retire. And the other area is the employee contribution, employer contribution rate balance. In the bill currently, there's a 1% employer increase and a 0.75% increase in the employee, and we think that needs to be rebalanced to achieve a better, a more equitable solution. And lastly, I'll just mention funding. You'll hear from the employer organizations a little later, but we agree very much with them that whatever costs that are shifted to school districts do need to be funded so that it does not harm our educational programs. Having said all of that, we remain flexible and appreciate that already in Pension Commission a few days ago there was an amendment to improve the balance in the package, and we are remaining flexible and open to still work on maybe making some other adjustments that would make this bill a better balanced bill. So with that, I think we've covered our main points, and I know you have a busy agenda. So.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hackett?
Hacking.
Yes. Could you explain to me what you would prefer to see for the balance between the employer and the employer contribution rate? You had mentioned an amendment in the Senate. Thank you.
Ms. Hacking.
Yes, thank you. TRA's original proposal was for a 2% employer increase with no increase in the employee contribution rate, and that was similarly in the governor's proposed bill. So that is our preference. An amendment was discussed yesterday but not offered to instead increase the employee rate by 1.5% and increase the employee rate by 0.25% in a future year, making it a little more balanced approach than what is in the current bill. But those are the the competing proposals, I guess you could say.
Mr. Stoffel, would you like to add any comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, I have nothing special to add.
Well, thank you for your testimony. If you wouldn't mind staying close in case we have any other further questions, otherwise we'll proceed with our testimonies. And, Representative O'Driscoll, did you have something you want to add?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention that in my opening comments I said that it is not my plan in this committee this morning to remove the TRA provision. What you just heard, as there's some extensive discussion in the Senate chose to remove the TRA portion of the pensions bill yesterday. And I'm not saying that, quite honestly, I don't want to do anything with it today because I had not consulted with Senator Rosen on her rationale for doing that. And I don't want to necessarily do something because I saw on television that that's what the other side did. You kind of got to dig into the facts. You can't always just take it at face value of what you see on television, because there's probably some other thought process that go in. But we do have a few more committee stops along the way, and our goal is to try to find a solution for everyone. So once I get a chance to consult with Senator Rosen, I will certainly keep the other committees abreast of those conversations as the bill moves forward.
Great. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. So moving on to our further testifiers, Judy Blau with AFSCME, and then next on Dart is Rodney Rowe. Good morning. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and who you represent, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm Julie Blyle. I'm the Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5, but I'm here today on behalf of the Public Employees Pension Commission, and I want to let you know who is all included in the Public Employees Pension Commission. It's AFSCME Council 5, AFSCME Council 65, AFSCME Chapter 5 of the retirees, Communications Workers of America, Minnesota State Council, Conservation Officers Association, Education Minnesota Retirees, Middle Management Association, Minneapolis Committee of 13, Minneapolis Firefighters Local 82, Minnesota AFL-CIO, Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, Minnesota Government Engineering Council, Minnesota Nurses Association, Minnesota Police Fraternal Association, Minnesota Professional Firefighters Association, Minnesota State College Faculty, Minnesota State Patrol Troopers Association, Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis, Retired Educators Association of Minnesota, SEIU Local 284, St. Paul Teachers, and Teamsters Local 320. And those are the groups that are included. And the statement that I'd like to make is as follows. Our goal at the beginning of the legislative session was to accomplish major pension reform to make public employee pensions sustainable in the future and today. Our coalition continues to be united and will continue to work together for the betterment of our members and retirees. Public pensions affect over 1 out of every 10 workers in Minnesota, and over 200,000 retired public employees who live in every county in our state receive over $4.2 billion per year and $350 million per month in benefits. The $100 million that Governor Dayton recommended in his budget is a very strong effort to fix pensions. Our group has strongly supported putting money into the pension plans. The Pension Commission bill has several elements of Governor Dayton's proposal. Some of the objectives that our Public Employee Pension Commission supports are achieved in the pension bill. There are still unresolved provisions in this bill that cause many of our members concerns. We hope these concerns can be resolved. One thing is clear to all members of our group: a significant investment of new money into the pension plans on at least the magnitude of that recommended by Governor Dayton needs to be made. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next we have Mr. Rodney Rowe. I apologize for the chair.
It's okay.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and who you represent.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rodney Rowe, and I'm a teacher on leave out of the Worthington School Public School System, and I currently serve as the Secretary Treasurer of Education of Minnesota, which represents more than 86,000 educators across the state. It is no secret that Minnesota is facing a shortage of trained, licensed, and experienced teachers, particularly in Greater Minnesota and with our teachers of color. Almost half of our teachers leave the profession within 5 years, and there are more college students who are not entering the education field altogether. Retaining our teachers in the current environment is critically important, as I am aware of many of our current teachers who are considering retiring if these additional reforms are passed. These proposals will have a significant impact on the current teacher shortage. That's why it is so important to offer teacher compensation packages which recognize and reward their hard work on behalf of Minnesota's students. This includes keeping the promises of their pension fund when it comes to the end of their career. We do not support the proposed changes to the TRA fund included in this bill. We do, however, support the legislative proposal approved by the TRA Board of Trustees. It is a balanced solution to ensure a stable, reliable pension for the current and future retirees. It calls for an increase in the employer contribution with state aid to help offset those increases. Retirees and current teachers who will someday retire will also see their cost of living adjustments decrease. This is shared responsibility for a healthy pension fund. We also support reducing the interest assumption of all three retirement funds by just 0.5%. The TRA proposal already makes the adjustments necessary to ensure a healthy pension fund, and they are reforms to the plan. We also agree that the employer cost needs to be funded. Other changes will only make Minnesota's dire teacher shortage even worse. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, we have Doug Anderson, Executive Director of PERA. And I don't know if you also may want to address the question that we had earlier about augmentation as well. Thank you for welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed. Oh, maybe you missed that conversation. My apologies.
I'm sorry. Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Doug Anderson, Executive Director of Public Employees Retirement Association, and I can attempt to answer the question first about augmentation and the effect on PERA. As I understand it, I was not with PERA at the time. We did go back and take a look at and see if we could gather from the data what impact there was on member behavior, and it was really inconclusive. There were a lot of changes at the time. There's some changes in the way we were communicating with members, too. So when we look at year-over-year data, just couldn't really detect what exact impact may have been occurring at that time.
Thank you.
So regarding the pension bill, PERA has three plans that would be impacted by this bill. The board's position on these three plans varies and is dependent on the expected improvement or decline in the plan's funded status ratio. Not considering the provisions of this bill, one plan is expected to have an improving funding status, one plan has already achieved 90%, and one plan is expected to have a declining funding status. And I'll address each of these plans separately. First, just like to talk about the assumptions. PERA's board did support the change to the more conservative 7.5% investment return assumption for all plans. This assumption, as well as all the other actuarial assumptions that were recommended, were considered when evaluating the funding status and the sustainability packages for these plans. For the general plan, the funded ratio is expected to improve from 72% to 88% in the next 30 years, without consideration of the proposed benefit changes in this bill. Because of the plan's improved funding status, the board did not believe changes were urgently needed. Nevertheless, the board did believe that continued evaluation of these changes was appropriate, and in December 2016, the board directed that staff engage with stakeholders in 2017 to develop recommendations for the 2018 session. The board reaffirmed this desired approach at a board meeting yesterday and voted to strongly oppose PARA's general plan inclusion in this bill. For the correctional plan, the plan was 92% funded in 2016. Under the more conservative assumptions, the funded ratio is lower, but by plan design on the post-retirement adjustment methodology, likely to remain around 90% on an ongoing basis. The board did not believe it was necessary to implement sustainability measures or any other changes at this time. The bill proposes to change post-retirement adjustments from the current 1% with a 2.5% trigger to a fixed 1.5%. The actual increase for members over the past 3 years was 2.5%. If the new assumptions are met, and considering investment volatility, post-retirement adjustments under the current approach would likely fluctuate between 1 and 2.5%. So whether the change from the current trigger approach to a fixed 1.5% approach, whether that's a benefit reduction or benefit increase, is going to be difficult to predict. As with the general plan, the proposed COLA change was not brought forth by the board or the stakeholders. As a result, the board opposes inclusion of the PARA correctional plan in this bill. For a third plan, the police and fire plan, the board considered the funded status and direction and did believe that action in 2017 was necessary. After engaging with stakeholders and considering their recommendations and concerns, the board supported a sustainability package, including increased member and employer contributions, elimination of the 2.5% COLA trigger, and extension of the amortization period to 30 years. This package was supported by the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association and the Minnesota Professional Firefighters Association. We're pleased that the bill contains the board's proposed changes. The board also supported additional funding provided by the legislature to ensure long-term sustainability, and appreciate that direct funding has been included in the bill. These changes will set the police and fire plan on an improved path towards full funding within a reasonable time frame. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Driscoll.
Madam Chair, just again for some consistency and clarification, the question was asked by you, Madam Chair, what percent of full funding are the plans? And I might just ask Mr. Anderson, since there are sub-plans inside the PERA plan, the correctional plan and the police and fire, he may share what their current funding levels are as well, since we had that conversation earlier.
Yeah, thank you. I think you mentioned a few of them before, but if you'd also like to continue defining that again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The funding status for the general plan is mentioned earlier that it was 72% at the 8% assumption. It's also 72% at the 7.5% assumption, but there was some other assumption changes that occurred during the year. There are some demographic assumption changes. But more notably, there was an assumption change to the combined service annuity assumption, which is how the plans work together. And there was an outdated assumption, hadn't been updated in 15 years. And when that assumption recommendation came from the LCPR actuary, it was quite favorable for the general plan. So that really helped kind of soften the blow of the change in the investment return assumption. For the for the police and fire plan, the plan was 84% funded under the 8% assumption, and dropped to 80% funded under the 7.5% assumption. But the concern with that plan is that while it's 80% funded, it was going to decline gradually over the 30-year period. And then for the correctional plan, it was 92% funded under the 8% assumption. And it's quite a bit more complicated answer when the assumption is dropped to 7.5%, and it's complicated because of the trigger. So in that case, when the trigger exists, it's easier for the actuaries to value if they know the plan is above the trigger and expected to improve, when that happens, they include the 2.5% in the calculation and can come up with a definite answer. Or on the contrary, if it's below the threshold and expected to decline, they would know to always value the 1%. But if you're kind of in the middle ground and know that the trigger might fluctuate from year to year, it's more difficult to value the exact funded percentage. So that's where I mentioned it tends to hover around 90%, and if it drops below, the benefits go down. If it goes above, the benefits decrease, and it keeps it around 90%.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I say this with all jest to my friend, Mr. Anderson. He is an actuary, so you're going to get an actuarial answer.
For those oh, that explains it. Okay. Well, thank you so much, and thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Oh, Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Anderson, remind me, police and fire, their plans, they don't receive Social Security then either, do they? So it's pretty important to keep those plans solvent.
Mr. Yes. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Joaquin, that is correct. The police and fire do not receive Social Security.
And Madam Chair, Representative Joaquin's point, she's spot on. They don't, by the design, get Social Security, and the reason for that is that pension plans started before Social Security existed, so they were grandfathered into the pension plan and exempt from Social Security. That's not true in all cases, but that's the general rule. And then number two, in the bill, we do honor the request from PERA for the funding for PNF adjustments for employer and employee unchanged from the submission by the plan for solvency.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Next on the list, we have Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I'd like just to be allowed a little personal moment now, because I'd like to wish the chair a happy birthday.
Oh,
so today is her birthday.
Thank you. That's very nice.
Madam Chair, whether it's my birthday present to you or not, you got to share the meeting.
Yeah. Happy birthday to me. Wow.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Kelleher.
I'll proceed with my testimony. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent elected school board members from every school district in the state. And I want to start by thanking Representative O'Driscoll. What happened yesterday in the other body was somewhat of a huge shock to us. They actually took all the TRA provisions out, as Representative O'Driscoll said, and then they funded every other pension cost, employer and employee. So we were very nervous this morning that we might be walking into that kind of situation. And I just want to let you know that Representative O'Driscoll has a lot of integrity, and he's been very intrepid to make it through this bill to get it this far. Because in the end, in 10 years, we've had three cost increases for the employers. That's every 3 years. And members, that's too much. School districts don't have the ability to levy for pension costs. As you look at the other local governments, they do. The only way we get approved to get more money to fix this would be if we went to an operating referendum. And I don't believe the public would be really thrilled to come out and vote for that kind of thing. Other than that, we take it out of our general fund, and we're talking about services for students. I did have an opportunity to talk to Representative Loon, our education chair, about this. And we're receiving $91 from you, the bill that the governor sounds like he's going to veto. And this is going to take up a third to a half of that money to do this. We really do need the funding. Or we need the authority to levy, which we're not wild about, but at least that would give us a way to keep things solid around kids. Last but not least, I just want to bring out something that sounds really small in this whole thing is the rate of return. And TRA is in a special position because the bill last year got vetoed. We're going to go from an 8.5% rate of return, which I think everybody agrees just doesn't work very well, down to 7.5. So it's a 1% drop. I always thought, yeah, that sounds really good. We could do that. That's $100 million for TRA. Mm-hmm. So, members, I really want to encourage you to help Representative O'Driscoll go forward cover our costs, and then the reforms in here are critical. So you, we're not back here in 3 years after we said, you fixed us, you fixed us. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. All right, seeing none. Oh, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Kelleher. You know, frankly, I am very confused at why we argue against realistic expectations of return, because over years that I've been here, we have not, you know, there's been resistance, so I don't think we've had realistic settings of what's the expected return, and that's part of the problem that we're sitting in now. So whether it's discomforting, difficult, or unpleasant, the sooner that we get to what is reality, the sooner we will face that and address it. Do you have any comments on that?
Ms. Carter.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Quam. And you made a good point. I want to go back and talk to about it just a little bit. The reforms in this bill are important to stop us coming back every 3 years and fixing this. I brought up the rate of return just because that ends up to be a lot of money for school districts going forward, and it certainly doesn't sound like it is. So I agree, you know, certainly we want a healthy pension fund going forward. Schools made that commitment to their teachers. But we need your help in doing it. We only receive a bill at the end. The legislature decides what the pension funds look like. So from our view, we get that bill from you. And we'd just like some thoughtfulness about what you'd like it to look like in the end and how school districts might be able to manage their budgets better when in the face of this kind of crisis.
Thank you. All right. Next on the list, we have Gary Amoroso. Welcome. The executive director for the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. Deja vu for me, Madam Chair, was one of my board members when I served as a superintendent. So this takes me back, flashback time. Very quickly, I don't want to repeat what some of the other groups said, but my name is Gary Amoroso. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. We represent all the superintendents in the state as well as some other district-level employees. I want to thank Representative O'Driscoll for his comments that we've heard a couple times this morning that this is not a finished product, and that as the bill continues to make its way through the process, that there will still be opportunities for a few changes. We worked very hard with our colleagues at TRA and some of the other education organizations over the last 2 years to craft the proposal that TRA presented to the Pension Commission earlier in session. We accepted the fact that the employers would be need to pay an extra 2% over 4 years, but we were very clear, and we had a recommendation from the Commission that those funds would be provided by the state. One might think, well, why should the state fund our share, especially now in the bill in front of you? The employer piece has been reduced to 1% over 4 years. Our facts are very simple, that over the last few years we have already absorbed a 2% increase in the employer contribution to TRA. In the last adjustment that was made, we increased our proportion of payments by 0.5% over 4 years. That was totally absorbed by the school districts at a time when we were receiving anywhere between 1.5% and 2% on our formula, and so part of that was eaten away. Our current budget situation, I think all of you know that there's a bill sitting on the governor's desk this morning, an E-12 bill, an omnibus bill, that contains a 1.5% increase on the formula. Inflation is projected to be 2.4% next year. We're already behind the eight ball. And if this bill were to pass as presented, the 1.5% would not be 1.5% for the 850,000 students in the state. We would have part of that 1.5% needing to be used to contribute to the employer contribution for TRA. So we're concerned about that. We appreciate the fact, as I mentioned, that Representative O'Driscoll in the House and Senator Rosen is willing to continue the conversations. Because we want to make sure that we have a bill that meets the needs of the state. We fully support the need to have these types of modifications made to the system in order to create a stronger system, but we have a great amount of concern that we are going to be in a position of needing to use district resources in order to pay for whatever increase goes to the employers. So thank you, Madam Chair. We stand for questions.
Representative Szczynski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy birthday.
It is.
I just went through that a couple days myself. I know what it's like. Anyway. Just a question to the testifier. You mentioned the 2.5% inflationary. From a school district perspective, I know employees and you know, what is a vast majority as a percentage of that 2.5% when you say inflation, the cost of, what is the percentage of just running a building versus cost of employees to contributions? Like, what is that 2.5% made up of?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. My comment about inflation was what's being projected for the country. The U.S. inflationary increase of, I believe it's 2.4%, the CPI. Of about 2.4%. Our increases go from district to district. There are some fixed costs when you look at electricity and you look at, you know, other types of things to run a building. And then in Minnesota, I think all of you know, we have something called collective bargaining that we're required to participate in. We have a number of contracts that will be up as of July 1st. And so what those contracts could settle, that I don't know. But I do know that we are having the CPI being projected to be 2.4%, and right now we have a bill sitting on the governor's desk at 1.5% per year. This would add to that, in my opinion, a pretty significant pain that we're already going to have to absorb.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Representative Szczynski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So most, would you say, you say electricity, I know electricity is double in cost for majority of the districts, they doubled in the last 10 years, which is great policies from the federal and state government. But would you argue the 2.5%, which is argued that potentially may or may not be the story for Minnesota?
Mr. Amoroso?
You said that's a federal number.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's a projection of the CPI nationwide. You know, I've not seen it broken down for Minnesota. We could be higher, we could be lower. But the bottom line is that the current bill sitting on the governor's desk, and I know this isn't that committee, will not hit the rate of inflation in this state. And this would add to that challenge.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Amoroso, with the 1.5% that's currently in the education bill today, it's not keeping up with inflation. If this provision were to go through, it would take away from that funding. Do you have any idea of what the number would actually look like rather than 1.5%? What would a, for school districts, what would it look like?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I would be guessing, but I was under the impression that the 1%, I believe, would be somewhere, the 2% was somewhere in the area of $47 million over the biennium, I believe. So the 1%, I'm thinking, would be somewhere in the area of $24 million. Now, I may not be accurate on that. My colleagues from TRA could probably do a much better job than I. But when you're already, from my perspective, in a deficit mode, any number of millions is going to be unacceptable.
Representative Stansted.
Mr. O'Driscoll, do you have any idea of how that number would be impacted?
Madam Chair, I believe our previous testifier, Ms. Kalahara, addressed that, and I see she's standing. And she wants to come back and reiterate for the commission to help with Representative Sanchez's question.
Thank you.
No one wants to sit in the short chair. Oh, there he goes, Ms. Kelleher.
You wouldn't see me if I sat there. Madam Chair and members, Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And as this issue has gone forward, we were concerned to see what it looked like, what it might look like going forward. So we really looked at the TRA proposal. So we included the 2% cost increase, and we also put in money to pay for the reduction in the rate of return. And at the end, we added in 2% that the government might get us. And these are FY18 numbers. And it came up to 243 school districts are going to lose money in that scenario. And just think, we didn't add anything like the cross-subsidy of special education in there. That really sort of blows that number out. But it, you know, it's going to be tough, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sandstead.
So I'm really just looking for maybe a fill-in-the-blank answer. If this provision goes through, instead of education being funded at 1.5%, education will be funded at blank percent.
Lower?
Yes. And that number would be?
Lower.
How much lower?
Representative Driscoll.
I'm sorry, I don't want to put words into Ms. Kelleher's mouth, but I heard her say it would affect school districts by 0.75. I've also stated that it is my intention to try to secure funding and a global deal on this. That's why we're moving through the committee process to get it into Ways and Means as we start moving on this to get this. If you think that I'm saying this is a done product, I'm not a real fan of pushing this to school districts. I think there's a shared sacrifice in here between the employer and the employee on here. I'm fighting left and right to try to be able to get the school districts the money that they need without having to absorb it once again, as Ms. Kelleher and Mr. Amoroso said, in the formula. But right now, we're not at a position to talk finance because there's not a target. So
right.
We're trying to do a little push to get leaderships in the different areas and get folks to do that. And your help in that matter would be greatly appreciated, Representative Sandstead.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So we'll continue. Oh, who? Oh, Representative Mason, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last night I was talking with a woman who was a para in one of my school districts, and she said her district has already told her that she will probably lose her job next year along with a number of others, and they're planning on making substantial cuts. So just to emphasize, this is really a critical discussion.
Thank you. Representative Driscoll?
Representative Mason's point, we are in the season where by law school districts have to give notice to employees for unrequested
right.
leave. And so these two issues are independent, but nonetheless, you're right, there is a more global question that we're looking at, Representative Mason.
We do have a couple other testifiers on that list. Jill Schertz, who is the Executive Director of St. Paul Teachers, if she'd like to make her way down. And we also have Brian Rice on the list as well, and then we'll open it up to the public. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Schertz.
Thank you,
and
Chair. I'll leave the short chair for Brian, if that's okay. I don't get to do that often. Madam Chair, my name is Jill Schertz. I'm the Executive Director of the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. And I'll try to make this very brief. I do just want to make sure that we come up and say thank you. We're very grateful for all of the hard work of Representative O'Driscoll and Senator Rosen and Senator Pappas at the LCPR. Our organization supports this bill. Not only does our organization support it, but I'm incredibly pleased to say that we have the support of our union, our district, our active employees, and our retirees. I mentioned this at the LCPR meeting. We don't get to see this kind of thing come together that often. But I think there was unanimity that nothing is more important right now than retirement security. As a fiscal steward for the plan, sometimes we do have to do tough things. But that's how we keep the covenant with our members. We need to make sure that no matter what happens, at the end of the day, when somebody retires, they don't have to worry that 20 years later they might get a reduced check. We need to make sure that we keep core benefits sustainable. The St. Paul package does that, and we're very grateful. As well, I'll call out specifically our retirees. There was a moment in the drafting of this bill that our active teacher contribution could have gone up twice as much. And our retirees decided that instead they would take a 1% reduction for 2 years to avoid that outcome. And I think at the end of the day, that's what I've come to appreciate about teachers, is that at the end of the day, they care about intergenerational equity, and they're willing to do the tough thing. So with that, I just say thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the question I had just in my mind when you were talking, St. Paul Teachers, I know, is a separate plan, but what is your funding ratio now? We've heard the funding ratios from all the other plans. What is the St. Paul Teachers? Where is your pension plan at right now?
Ms. Schertz.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, we're at 63% on a market value basis, or rather actuarial basis, 60% on a market value basis.
And that reflects a number of factors. That reflects a historic underfunding. We're working hard to overcome that. This package does a great deal for that. As well, that represents us making choices over the last few years to put the plan on a more conservative footing. And as you've heard, when you do take down your assumed rate of return, that's what happens. We're willing to do that. We voluntarily moved from 8.5% to 8%, so our funded ratio dropped from a higher level down to that. As well, by moving to 7.5%, if we do nothing else, that ratio will move down. That's part of the reason we felt it was important to come through with a comprehensive package, deal with that so that for the long term, we have a sustainable plan.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Mr. Rice, if you'd like to, you chose not to sit in the short chair. I don't blame you.
I'll sit next to Representative.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Rice. I'm here this morning on behalf of Minnesota Professional Firefighters. That's a group of 1,700 full-time firefighters in 42 cities around the state that are included in this bill for the PRA police and fire provisions, as well as the 900 members of the Minneapolis Police Federation. We're very much in support of this bill and want to thank Representative O'Driscoll for the effort that he's done. This is a package that includes employer contribution increases of 1.5%, a 1% employee contribution, as well as $9 million annually as it, once it's phased in through the state. And we thank Governor Dayton for including that in his budget and for Representative O'Driscoll and the Pension Commission fighting for that. These are very important sustainability provisions, and as Representative Joachim said, the only pension these public safety officers have is through what you as state legislators provide them. They are not covered by Social Security, as Representative O'Driscoll pointed out. Some of these plans now in Para actually go back to the 1870s when they've been, so they were in existence in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, the other major cities had these plans. They predated Social Security, and they've stayed separate and apart from Social Security. So not only is it their pension, it's their survivor benefits, it's their disability benefits, and a number of other provisions. And I actually was hoping to testify after the Carlson brothers, because they've testified in the Pension Commission other times about the unfairness of the COLA, and that somehow because people could retire before 55, they're not making enough sacrifice. I'd like to call the committee's attention to the 12A amendment on lines 41.18 to 41.22. 4 years ago, in 2013, the police and fire groups came forward with another reform package to save their plan and add more money and contribute more. And one thing they did that was very significant, every member of the plan agreed to, it used to be standard that you waited 1 year to get your COLA and then it would phase in. Police and fire understood this problem, and every member of the plan group that retired after June 1, 2014, waited 2 full years and actually 3 years to get a pension increase. So you're going to hear from the Carlson brothers that somehow the police and fire aren't making the sacrifice. They're absolutely wrong. This is a totally unique provision in state law. These guys have sacrificed. I mean, and not only do they do it every day by going on the street protecting the public, they've done it with their pensions. And notwithstanding any comments you might hear from the cities and the counties, the police and fire in this state have stepped up time and time and again. They understand the idea of shared sacrifice. They really value their pensions, and they really appreciate what this legislature has done in the past and what Representative O'Driscoll is doing in this bill for them.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Boy, if you weren't tuned in, you are now.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. So apparently the Carlson brothers will have the rebuttal.
I'm sure they will.
Gary Carlson.
It is my hope we will not need to call upon the state troopers to mediate here.
Oh, my. Okay. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Ms. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, and I will put words in my own mouth right now. Let me first say that the League supports public pensions. These are an important part of the compensation package. We can
provide to our employees, and we want to make sure, first and foremost, that that they're fully funded, that they're financially balanced, and that they can be sustainable into the future. And so with that, I do want to testify, actually, in support of the pieces of the PNF changes that occur that are included in this package, because we do have a severe funding issue with this plan, and if we don't take action soon, we will end up in a very serious financial problem. So I do want to say that the pieces that we do really support, we wanted the Pension Commission to look broadly at all of the pieces of the pension equation, not just simply rely on employer and employee contribution increases, and the Pension Commission did a good job of reviewing all aspects of the pension system to make sure that wherever there's an inequity, we try to address that. And so we do support the deferred augmentation, the recalibration of the amortization date, and the state aid that was recommended by the governor and included by the Pension Commission in the PNF plan formula changes. I do want to stress that one piece that absolutely needs to be in here is the removal of the COLA trigger, because without removing that COLA trigger, it's in the bill, but without removing that COLA trigger, all of our financial actions will do nothing except accelerate the payment of the COLA to an earlier date. So we absolutely need to maintain that in the bill, and we do support repealing that as well for the general plan. I know that that is something that the PERA board does not want to do yet, but we think that that has to be removed so that any future financial changes will actually fix the problem of the plan and not simply accelerate the payment of the COLA. Madam Chair and members, I guess I just want to say that from an employer's perspective, we appreciate the fact that this is a balanced package. We never want to have to make contribution increases. We just made contribution increases for both the general plan and this plan on 1/1/2015, and we've had a long succession of contribution increases. But with the balanced package, we will support this. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. All right, seeing none, we will open it up to the public. Please come down and introduce your name and who you represent and proceed with your testimony. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dave Johnson, and I represent the MMRA, which is a group of retirees and paragenerals, including the former members of MRF, which are about 3,500 retirees who have basic are basic plan members, which means they don't coordinate with Social Security, and their paragenerals pension is their primary source of retirement security. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative O'Driscoll. I think sometimes pension bills are a thankless task, and I know there's a lot of work that goes into it, so thank you. Mm-hmm. I'd like to just raise concern today about some of the provisions in paragenerals that removed the trigger. And by way of background, prior to 2010, all the plans had the same COLA of 2.5%. And as part of the 2010 sustainability legislation, the whole concept of COLA triggers were added. And most of the negotiations with the other plans included retirees, employers, and retirees. Whereas the paragenerals plan, most of the cuts were primarily on the retirees, and they went from a 2.5% COLA down to a 1% COLA, which is by far the lowest COLA of any of the plans, and remains the lowest even, I believe, long term if this pension bill were to be enacted. But they do have the 2.5% COLA. We hired an actuary who looked at all the sustainability measures that have been enacted between 2010 and 2016, and that analysis showed that 82% of all of those measures have been borne by the retirees, while only 9% have been borne by the employers. And I guess our concern is this, is if the retiree-related measures are enacted in this bill, there would be uniformity in, with respect to removing the triggers, but there would not be conformity or uniformity with respect to a replacement. And probably more important, you know, there's been a lot of work with all the groups and the funds to try to put this something together where there is shared responsibility to deal with this. And I think the retirees feel that having borne a vast majority of the cost of these changes and to have other changes apply only to them when there aren't anything from employees or anything from the employers, not only does that not seem fair, given what's going on in other plans, I think it also makes it harder long-term for everybody to come to the table to figure it out. So we do believe that ultimately the COLA trigger needs to be replaced, but we think it needs to be part of a broader package. So, again, thank you for your consideration, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any other testifiers, please come forward. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent and proceed.
I am Lonnie Duberstein, president of the Retired Educators Association of Minnesota, representing roughly 10,000 members. And I would like to say that for all of the portions of the bill that have passed so far and all of those that will be passed in the future, you could say two things. One, it could be better, and two, it could be worse. And so I think that you have the unenviable task of trying to accommodate people on all sides of this issue, and I certainly thank the committee for your work and your deliberance and your consideration for things that have been done and will be done. And I certainly want to thank Representative O'Driscoll for the unenviable task that he has had the past several weeks. I know that he has attempted to do that with a fairness and that concern of trying to put something together that will be sustainable and somehow ride that that thin little rail in the middle of all of the parties involved. I don't have facts and figures to share with you because you've already had those. You people deal with unbelievable amounts of paperwork, even more than I did when I was a teacher. But I do want to address an issue that our Representative Mason brought up regarding the teacher retention and the teachers in her district that are looking at teacher cuts. In my career, I was pink slipped six times due to declining enrollment, and so I know what that feels like. I was fortunate enough to be able to retire from Roseville, and I proudly represent the Roseville area retired teachers also. But what I want to say is just a little anecdotal message. And Monday night, I will get to go back to our high school and award a scholarship from our association and also scholarships from PTA and another scholarship. I've been doing that probably for 7 or 8 years, and early on, out of maybe 25, 30 scholarship recipients, they would get up, say their name, where they plan to go to school, and what they plan to do with their future. And at that time, out of the 25, and I don't have any hard data, I'm just going by recollection, probably 6, 8, 10 of them would say education. Last year when I did that, there were two that said they were going into education, and one of them was planning on teaching overseas. Mm. The recruitment retention of teachers is critical. People are leaving. People are not joining. I've heard several teachers encourage their children to not go into teaching. It's something that it's hitting us now, and it's going to certainly hit us in the future. One of the big draws for recruitment retention is that solid retirement, because you certainly don't get it in wages throughout your career. You know that you're going to make a modest, comfortable income, but you also would have that modest, comfortable retirement. And so that was my message. It's anecdotal, but keep it in mind, please. And I once again would like to thank the committee, and I'd like to thank the Legislative Commission and Representative O'Driscoll for all of their work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duberstein. Any other testimony? Yes, please come forward and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. The other Carlson.
Madam Chair, that's correct. I am the other Carlson brother, Keith Carlson. I represent the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the greater Minnesota regional center counties and 4 suburban counties here in the metro area. I'm also speaking on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties. I want to start by just going over really what the status of the funding of PERA is right now. You've heard that they are 72% funded currently, and roughly will stay in that area under that bill. But what that means is that for every $10 of obligations that they have currently, they only have $7 to pay that. Mm. putting it in other terms, before these changes, they were the equivalent of 3% of payroll short of what was needed to fully fund the general plan. With the 7.5% interest rate assumption, that goes down to 3.5%. So they're in substantially poor financial circumstances. I want to thank Representative O'Driscoll, the members of the Pension Commission, because this bill does address that issue. But I do want to make it clear on how they address that issue. It's largely by extending the amortization period. There's no contribution cut or increases. There are no benefit cuts, by and large, that reaches the reduction in that 3.5% deficiency. By extending the amortization period by 13 years, that cuts that shortfall by 3%. Mm-hmm. The other change that makes the second most significant reduction in that is changing the augmentation of early retirees' benefits. And that's what I want to speak to because of the concerns that have been raised by others. First, this is a uniform provision. It applies to all the general plans. I wish it extended to the police and fire plan. It does not, but we do support the language that's currently in there. But there's been a lot of talk about intergenerational equity. And I'll quite frankly tell you, the current augmentation of the early retirees' benefits is an unfair to individuals who are effectively paying for it, both the taxpayers and those employees who stay and continue to work up until their normal retirement age. They, between the two of them, they're paying an additional 6% of payroll to pay for that cost. If we didn't have that, employees' contribution rate, if they were to share in that windfall, could be reduced by 10%. They're already paying 6.5% to pay, and that's money that they don't have for living expenses. That's money they don't have for their children's college expenses. It's no small piece of it. And I want to speak to the cost of living changes. First, I want to make it clear that the changes that are being made here have no effect on any employee who's over age 35 or so. The current cost of living increase for the general plan as well as the police and fire plan is 1%. This contingent COLA that you've heard spoken about only occurs when the plans reach 90% of funding for two consecutive years. For the police and fire plan, under current funding schemes, they're never going to reach that. For the general plan, they will not reach that under current funding schemes until 2061. Mm-hmm. Consequently, anybody over the age of 35, based on most age projections, is never going to see 2.5%. So there's no real sacrifice here. Again, you know, all the employees and taxpayers are subsidizing what, you know, for many is the luxury of retiring early. I'll just conclude and make it clear, not only are employees who work till normal retirement age paying this subsidy, in addition, they're paying an additional subsidy for the health care that those early retirees may elect to receive through their employer. Under state law, we have to allow those individuals to participate in our health plans. And every city, county, school district in the state carries a liability for that cost for the additional premium that is paid to allow that to occur. Again, that's unfair. That's intergenerational inequity. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I think it's time for us to maybe have a discussion as a committee on this bill. We want to be cognizant of the time as well. Are there any other member questions or comments? Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative O'Driscoll, having served on the Pension Commission, I know how fun it is to put these bills together. Sometimes when especially when we're in deficit at the state level. And we need to put more money into them. It's difficult to do, but we've done that in the past. This year we're looking at a surplus, depending on how you look at it. We have a surplus in this bill, and this bill is just another line of bills that have come forward in the legislature that's showing the priorities of the majority. Instead of putting money in funding schools, instead of putting money into programs for the elderly and disabled, instead of funding more cops on the street, we're giving money back to the richest people in the state with the tax cuts. And we could use some of that money to put in this bill to help sustain our pension plans in the future so that our former employees can count on their pension retirement. Their pension and their retirement and their retirement income. So, Madam Chair, at this time, I can't support this bill. I mean, I understand the provisions in here, and some of them need to be done, but I can't support this. And hopefully, going forward, when it gets to Ways and Means, or before that, that we were able to put some more money into this bill to take care of some of the, especially the school districts, to make sure that we're not giving them an increase on one hand and then taking away on the other by having to pay out more for their retirement benefits. So, Madam Chair, that's I guess my statement.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Nelson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of comments. First, I'd like to respond to some of the things that Representative Nelson had brought forward. In the tax bill, the majority, as he said, in our priorities in the tax bill, one of the things that we've done is we've offered a $414 tax credit each year to college students. And gosh, if you're thinking about the teaching profession, there's a $414 tax credit for you right there in the tax bill if the governor will sign it. If you happen to be getting Social Security benefits and a retiree here in the state of Minnesota, we've got your back on that too, because we're going to reduce the amount of income that people receive in Social Security. Retirees that we're talking about here, Representative Nelson. I think that was just a little outside of the bounds of what we're talking about today, because you know full well that there's other good provisions in there for retirees. But I'll just leave it at that, because both of those issues came up, and both of those issues are addressed in the tax bill, that we certainly hope that the governor finds the good graces to support here today. That notwithstanding, when the elections of 2016 were done, and different committee and commission assignments were going to be determined, I was asked by stakeholder groups, would I continue on with the Pension Commission? This is my third term on the Pension Commission. I'm questioning why I did that at this point. No, I seriously am not. I agreed that I would stay on because we had started some work. Those of you who are watchers of this process know that every 2 years the chairmanship or the chair of this commission flips from the House to the Senate. In the last 2 years, the 15-16 biennium, I was the chair. In 2015, I brought a unanimous bill that passed the legislature and was on the governor's desk. Last year, all but four members of the legislature that were present in the House and the Senate voted for a bill that the governor vetoed. Some of the things that we're talking about here today could have been softened had the governor signed the bill last year. So those issues from 2016 that were unresolved are being brought forward to 2017 to be resolved as well. I am not without experience in this. Both my parents were public employees. Both my parents drew PERA pensions. My financial background, my understanding of public pensions prior to coming to the legislature made me a likely suspect, whatever you want to call it, to get into the Pension Commission and ultimately be one who helps lead to solve the problems on this. This bill is not perfect. We don't have the funding. We said that we're going to want to get it into a spot to hopefully be able to include it in a omnibus position for a final and global agreement. As the chair of this commission, this committee, you get to carry some bills that you don't like as well. If you think pensions are controversial, try elections. And so for whatever reasons, my disposition, my temperament has been able to be used to be able to try to find solutions for folks on this. I continue to remain committed to do that.
Not everybody gets to carry the cute kittens and pretty puppy bills in the legislature, and I can assure you that pensions is not one of those cute kittens and pretty puppy bills. And so with that, Madam Chair, I ask for the member's support. And I renew my motion that House File 565, as amended, be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative O'Driscoll renews his motion that House File 565, as amended, be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no.
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Everyone that was a part of this. Thank you. Oh, I make a motion to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails, and we're out of here. Woo!